This is certainly one of the most difficult times to make LIHTC deals work. As you mentioned, higher construction costs, higher insurance costs, and I'll add to that less soft money from states and counties. To that end, the simple answer to the biggest challenge is gaps in permanent sources. Our industry has seen its fair share of challenges, and while construction costs and interest rates have started stabilizing, unfortunately, other challenges are surfacing.
Welcome to Buzz House, a Baker Tilly podcast where you can hear all the buzz around multifamily housing with all the info you need to help you win now and anticipate tomorrow. Hi, I'm Don Bernards, the principal in charge of Baker Tilly's multifamily housing practice.
And I'm Garrick Gibson, a principal at Baker Tilly, also specializing in consulting on multifamily housing transactions across the country.
Let's get started. The low-income housing tax credit equity market has an annual volume that's approaching almost $20 billion. As such an important piece of the LIHTC deal capital stack and affordable housing industry, there is always extreme interest. Derek and I always see it every conference, every time we have a guest on our podcast, just very extreme interest from the viewpoint of the tax credit syndicator. We are very glad to have joined us today from R4 Capital, Lindsay Soika and Jason Gershwin. Thank you both for joining us today. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
We'll jump into questions both around the overall market as well as key considerations in your deals from the equity perspective. With that, I'm going to turn things over to Garrick. Garrick?
Thank you, Don. So Jason, Lindsay, thank you for joining us today. Before we get started into questions, would you both please let our listeners know a little bit more about your professional backgrounds as well as a bit about R4 Capital?
Sure, happy to. Thank you for having us, Don and Garrick. We appreciate it. About my background, so I'm happy to start. I'm not sure how many people say that they want to be a tax credit syndicator when they grow up. Certainly I didn't. I don't know, maybe Lindsay, that was what he wanted to do. But I definitely took a very circuitous route to working in the LIHTC industry and with R4 Capital. In college, I wanted desperately to be a sports agent. I saw the movie Jerry Maguire and I was hooked. I studied business undergraduate, had internships at a couple of major sports agencies, and decided to go to law school to try to pursue that dream. After my second year in law school, I went to Weil Gotshal as a summer associate, in big part because the lawyer who represented the players' associations for the NHL, NBA, NFL ran a group there. But that lawyer was in litigation, and I much preferred my rotation to corporate and private equity. I also realized that being a sports fan is way more fun than being a fan and working in sports. So when I graduated law school in the private equity group at Weil Gotshal made me an offer, I went and joined that group. I worked there for a few years, and then I left to join a market rate real estate development company. After 3 years there, I met through a headhunter, somebody that was starting a boutique investment bank who had run tax advantage investing at Morgan Stanley before the financial crisis. And he and I were somewhat of a two-man shop, and it's there where I got my introduction to LIHTC and affordable housing. We got hired, more because of him certainly than me, as the restructuring advisor to an affordable developer from the Bay Area. And performing the due diligence, putting together all the models, materials, and then marketing and selling off those assets was a crash course in learning about LIHTC for me. In doing our many site visits out on the West Coast, I was particularly drawn to the reactions of the tenants, how proud they were of their units, how appreciative they were to the developer and to the property management staff. In early 2011, while still working at that company, we were marketing a large LIHTC deal in New Orleans, and I negotiated a confidentiality agreement with Alan Cohn, the longtime tax credit lawyer, who at the time lived in the same town as me. And though it was investor didn't buy that deal, Alan one day called me and in his gruff Alan voice, for all those of you who know Alan, asked if I was happy. And I didn't really know what that meant, but he asked if I was happy and that he wanted to introduce me to his longtime good friend and biggest client, Mark Schnitzer. Mark is certainly well known in the industry. And at that time, Mark had left Centerline a couple of years before and was finalizing the business plan for R4 Capital. Mark and I met on his 50th birthday. He may kill me for aging him like that, but we hit it off. We hit it off immediately, and he offered me the first ever job at R4. So on May 1st of 2011, R4 began. I joined Mark, and we started as a new syndication firm. Trying to answer the question, why did the world need another LIHTC syndicator at the time? So sort of moving over to why about R4 Capital and why the world needed another syndication firm. R4 is a real estate investment firm that specializes in affordable housing. Affordable housing is all that our 100 employees have expertise in. It's all that we do. There are three legs to the R4 stool, so to speak: equity, debt, and most recently development, sort of limited development. On the equity side, where I spend most of my time, We closed our first $80 million fund back in 2012. And since then, we've closed and managed more than $6.3 billion of LIHTC equity. That's in 37 multi-investor funds and 13 single investor or proprietary funds. We have investments. Just last week, we closed our 500th equity investment. So we have more than 500 properties located in 49 states and territories. We have three properties out in the Northern Marianas Islands in Saipan. And we don't yet have a property in West Virginia or Wyoming. So any developers listening who have properties there, we're interested. On the debt side of our business, in 2016, Jim Spound and Tara Nussbaum joined us to start R4 Capital Funding as a subsidiary of R4. R4CF is a tax-exempt lender that provides mortgage capital for affordable housing properties also across the country. And to date, R4CF has originated and services more than $3.5 billion of tax-exempt debt on behalf of our institutional investors. As for development, most recently in 2021, we formed Forward Housing to specialize in the acquisition and rehabilitation of affordable housing properties. Led by Alex Magliazzi and drawing on the expertise and experience of many R4 team members, Forward Housing has to date closed on 10 acquisitions also across the country. And with that, I'll turn it over to Lindsay.
Thank you. And thank you again for having me. So I work in acquisitions at R4 Capital, covering the Mid-Atlantic and Midwest portions of the country. I've been at R4 for over 10 years, and prior to that, worked at Related Capital or Charter Mac or Centerline, as some of you may know it as. I've worked on both the debt and equity side of the business, all in acquisition and originations, and have been in this line of business since 2004. Prior to entering the LIHTC world, I worked at Lehman Brothers, which may age me as well.
All right. Thank you both for that background information. We're going to go ahead and jump into our questions. Lindsay, I guess I'll start with you for our first question. So given this post-COVID world that we've been in and this economic climate, what are the biggest challenges that you're facing in closing LIHTC deals? And how are you navigating items that, you know, that we've seen a lot of fluctuation in, from insurance costs to construction cost increases to interest rate increase and, you know, and other things, but those are some of the main ones.
This is certainly one of the most difficult times to make LIHTC deals work. As you mentioned, higher construction costs, higher insurance costs, and I'll add to that less soft money from states and counties. To that end, the simple answer to the biggest challenge is gaps in permanent sources. Our industry has seen its fair share of challenges, and while construction costs and interest rates have started stabilizing, unfortunately, other challenges are surfacing. I would say insurance costs and increased operating expenses have been very problematic for rural deals where rents are suppressed. To that end, we've seen developers and insurance carriers become very creative to help offset the increases, including more and more income averaging across projects. We've also seen the addition of state credits across the country. They've been certainly widespread to help fill gaps as well. And additionally, I'll add that across the market, both equity and debt, the creative financing solutions that have come to the market to minimize interest carry or increase basis have really been amazing. And I think we're going to continue to see that again.
Thank you for that, Lindsay. Jason, how have you seen investor demand for LIHTC projects shift over the last couple of years? It seems like the last, again, since COVID and whatever is post-COVID, but really the last couple of years, how's investor demand looked?
So I'd say over the last couple of years, I'd say investor demand for LIHTC projects has been remarkably steady. Of the more than $6.3 billion of equity that we have under management at R4, we have 106 bank investors totaling just less than 60% of our total equity, and 28 insurance companies totaling just more than 40% of our total equity. So notably, more than 86% of the equity that R4 has executed has been through a national, regional, or club-style multi-investor execution, and the other 14% is in one of our 13 proprietary funds. Our bread and butter over the last 13 and a half years has been multi-investor funds, where we typically see a good mix of bank investors who are motivated all or at least in part by CRA, and insurance companies who are motivated by investment return and increasingly ESG and impact investing, certainly over the last couple of years. The LIHTC industry has a fantastic track record built up over more than 35 years, and we believe that the market is at its best when there's a healthy mix of CRA bank and economically and now impact investment motivated insurance companies and other corporates. More specifically, talking about the last couple of years, from an R4 perspective, this year in 2024, we're on track to have our record year on the equity side. In 2021, we closed $773 million of equity, which was our record still to this date. And over the last 3 years, we've averaged about $734 million of equity closed. In 2024, we've already accomplished a lot, even though we haven't yet hit the fourth quarter, typically our most busy quarter, our busiest quarter. In 2024, we've already closed $673 million of equity with an additional $80 million already raised and a fresh year-end national multi-fund that we just put out in the market. So with some good fortune these next couple of months, we expect to end the year approaching or exceeding $900 million on the equity side, which, as I mentioned, would be a record and a record by a long shot. Generally, over the last couple of years, I would say that our insurance company investors and certainly some of the banks have been really focused on impact investing. At R4, we like to say that affordable housing is the original ESG impact investment, which can generate a measurable beneficial impact alongside a financial return. Our investors have definitely, and Lindsay and our acquisitions teams can attest, our investors have been more active in attending ribbon cuttings and grand openings, and they've been working collaboratively with our marketing group on press releases and more. While every investor has different particular areas of focus, when we evaluate new opportunities, we are definitely paying close attention to price per credit and leverage. Raising a lot of our equity through multi-investor funds is highly competitive, and so we always have to balance those key metrics like gross price per credit and a fund's must-pay debt leverage across the fund. So those are just a couple of examples of things that we look at carefully when evaluating opportunities across the country.
Very good. And congratulations on kind of this record year. It's great to see that consistency and growth.
Fingers crossed. Hey. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Hey, just a quick follow-up question, Jason. And we're getting this question a lot just across the industry, right? We're all expecting one, maybe two cuts yet this year. We'll see what 2025 looks like. How is that going to affect? Do you know, is it immediate? Is it kind of tricky late? It seems like maybe it's the market's already somewhat adjusted to some of these cuts. What's your take on that?
So it's a great question. I wouldn't say from an investor side that the anticipated rate cuts will have an immediate impact. Certainly at the property level, I'd say more certainly. You know, as Lindsay and our acquisition team members can attest, closing LIHTC investments to the lower tier these last couple of years with continued increased costs, continued rising insurance costs, interest rates that were supposed to move downward but sort of have been stuck for a while has not been easy. Developers have had to be creative in finding additional sources of soft funds, deferring more developer fee, and even in some cases coming out of pocket to get a deal closed. So for sure, I would say reductions in interest rates will help alleviate some of those pressures and potentially could make some previously infeasible projects more feasible again at the lower tier. But at the investor level, I just don't envision any type of knee-jerk reaction. To your point, I think maybe it's been priced in. I don't expect or anticipate that investors will be in the mood to accept lower yields than we currently have out in the market. While at R4, we're selling and closing our multi-investor funds at a good, modest pace, there doesn't appear to be a flood of additional investor capital that's either entering or leaving the LIHTC market. So while we're all hopeful for lower rates here sooner rather than later, and I think it will help get more deals done, I think it'll be some time before we see any direct impacts on the investor level.
Yeah, thank you for that, Jason. Also, this is actually a question for both, you know, you or Lindsay, depending on how you want to answer it, but kind of alluding to your last response about, you know, you still have kind of the same investors that are there, but what strategies are you actually employing to ensure that these LIHTC projects are remaining financially viable and remain attractive to investors in this environment?
So that is one of our biggest challenges. We would love to say that increasing price per credit and no ceiling on leverage to make the deals work will also be attractive to investors, but we all know that's not the case and unfortunately impossible. So what are things that we're looking for? Investors are looking for strong partners, including healthy guarantors, and experience with navigating the ups and downs of our industry. We know that not every guarantor or developer has the balance sheet and or experience that is needed, but we can be creative with structuring operating reserves or ensuring the developer has chosen strong partners, including management or general contractor, and oftentimes we'll help in partnering them as well. One of the biggest points of attraction to an investor is low price per credit, and we can offset that with faster pay-ins to help make the deals work and reduce interest carry. Investors are always attracted to CRA markets as well, as Jason alluded to, as well as social impact projects. So those are other things that we're looking for, or maybe developers should look to into as well. More and more communities, have had increases in rental rates. Communities can't thrive without affordable housing, and we've seen more and more municipalities embrace affordable housing. So we're hopeful that that will also impact a lot of additional soft funding to help these projects work.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Lindsay just said. I don't have a ton to add. I would just note that, you know, at R4, our business model as a syndicator may be a little bit different than some of our competitors. Of the nearly $6.5 billion of equity we have under management, 86% of that business is in a multi-investor fund, whether national or regional like California, or in some cases, we do very large deals in sort of a single asset club style fund. So we don't approach a deal or buy a deal with just one investor or one execution in mind. We sort of need to think more holistically. And so we need to ensure that there's not an erosion in sort of what I would call core LIHTC business terms. Certainly, many of our investors are a part of AHIC and closely follow the AHIC guidelines. And so, you know, many of us have been doing this for a long time. I don't know that any leader or, you know, CEO of a syndication firm has more experience than Mark. It's impossible because he's been doing it since the credit became a part of the code back in 1986. And so, you know, to us, when a developer asks for some material deviation on any term, or even if it has something to do with pricing or whatever it is, we need to make smart decisions for our own sake, and then certainly on behalf of our investors, so that Mark or I or other members of our team, if when we're selling the funds and our investors, you know, of our 135 investors, we have some investors that do a ton of due diligence on top of what we do and others that do sort of more limited due diligence. But we need to be prepared that if any investor asks us a question of why did you agree to that term, why did you agree to that price on this particular deal, why did you agree to maybe deviate from an industry standard, we need to have sort of a very clear explanation of why we made that decision. And so certainly, you know, working with experienced developers, working with emerging developers that sometimes bring on, you know, long-term partners or consultants, we're happy to do all of it, but we definitely adhere to sort of those core LIHTC industry standards.
Perfect. Thank you both for that. Lindsay, just one last question that we get a lot from developers. When a developer is, you know, ready to go to the market to send projects out to syndicators, you know, what are some of the first questions, hurdles a deal, you know, has to pass even to kind of move in your process? And kind of related is, are there must-haves, must-nots, you know, when they send you a deal and you're thinking about your end investors?
We often don't like to use the word must-nots or no, but sometimes we have to. In today's market, and I think we've heard this common theme, one of the first things we look at right now is leverage. And while it's rare to have those must-nots, sometimes escalated leverage can be just that. And I think you'll see that across the market right now. Another thing is high price per credit, as I mentioned earlier. It could be a deterrent because it can skew the fund average, as Jason pointed out, how we structure our funds. So, you know, a large deal with a high price per credit can skew the entire fund. And investors simply are just not looking at high price per credit unless, again, there's always the CRA market or the need of a certain market for an investor. But in general, this is what we're seeing. Another thing that we look at is how realistic or conservatively has the developer underwritten their terms. Sometimes this can be vacancy or debt service coverage, including OPEX and rents, obviously with exceptions like 100% Section 8 or in-place rehabs in exceptional markets. But for the most part, we're not looking at a deal with low vacancy and low debt service coverage unless it has those exceptions. Otherwise, it could lead to debt cuts, which brings us back to our permanent source shortfall. Another thing, as I mentioned earlier, is experience of the developer and terms, as Jason mentioned too. So we're looking at required terms that can be a turnoff. So limited guarantees or legal terms that could deter us from getting a tax opinion. So obviously tax opinion is number one, but we know what our investors would be asking in terms of some of those legal issues that sometimes come up. So if we get an RFP that says this is what we need, we can often say like, we can't give that but, and have a conversation. Hard cost per unit. We are generally looking to see a minimum of $35,000 per unit on rehab. So we'll look at that as, you know, a first guide or something to ask as well. And I think lastly, we'll look at equity size. So we're in a position where we could be a little bit more flexible because of how our fund is executed. So we can handle larger deals in a unique way. Very small deals, however, can sometimes be harder to place. But we will look at all of these factors when making suggestions or asking questions, but just wanted to point out how all of these factors can have a large impact on our investment guidance.
Very good, Lindsay. That's it for this episode of The Buzz House, catching up with Jason Gershwin and Lindsay Soika from R4 Capital, talking about the LIHTC equity market and project underwriting. Once again, I'm Don Bernards.
And I'm Garrick Gibson. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. For additional resources around multifamily housing, check out BakerTilly.com. If you have a suggestion for the show, email us at buildabakertilly.com. That's BUILD@BakerTilly.com. See you next time on Buzz House.